My name is Andrew Gamson, and it's my privilege to be your host for the Culture Watch podcast. Thank you so much for listening. This is a podcast of Speaking for Him. The purpose of the Culture Watch podcast is to look at current events and news items from a Christian perspective, because I truly believe that it is important for us as Christians to look at world events through a biblical lens and to have a proper response to it, because there are always conversations around the water cooler, and with the internet, the water cooler has expanded, and we need to make sure that we are offering people the hope of the scriptures and the hope of the Lord of the scriptures in the midst of the strife that is in our world. So I'm so glad that you have joined us for this podcast. If you'd like more information on this podcast or the Speaking for Him podcast, which comes out on the stream every Wednesday, please make sure that you avail yourself of the contact information that will roll at the end of the show. I would love to hear from you with any feedback you may have, recommendations, criticisms, anything you have to say. I want to hear it. So please reach out and contact me. And with that being said, let's look at news for the week of March 25th. Today we start out our news coverage focusing in on the Supreme Court.
Is it a problem that the First Amendment hamstrings the government when it tries to censor speech? That was the question asked by liberal-leaning Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson during oral arguments yesterday for Murthy v. Missouri, the case that will decide whether the Biden administration can pressure social media companies to remove content. Let's take a listen.
Justice Jackson?
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. What would you have the government do? I've heard you say a couple times that the government can post its own speech, but in my hypothetical, kids, this is not safe, don't do it, is not going to get it done. And so I guess some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country.
Conservative Justice Samuel Alito, on the other hand, had this to say.
I cannot imagine federal officials taking that approach to the print media, our representatives over there. If you did that to them, what do you think the reaction would be? And so I thought, the only reason why this is taking place is because the federal government has got Section 230 and antitrust in its pocket.
Here to weigh in on this case is journalist Matt Taibbi, whose reporting has helped expose the efforts undertaken by federal officials to exert influence over content moderation. Welcome to Rising, Matt.
Thanks for having me on, Robbie, Brianna.
Great to have you back with us. Obviously, this is an issue we've talked about a lot on this show, that we followed closely your work and work by others to bring to light what the federal government did to try to control the narrative on social media. So finally, we're at the stage where the case is being heard by the Supreme Court. And I think the impression from a lot of people, of our thinking, who hope that the Supreme Court will put some limits on federal officials trying to exert this censorship effort over the companies. I think we were a little concerned that the justices seemed to be wary. We heard there from Ketanji Brown Jackson, but she was not alone in being wary of holding back or kneecapping or preventing the federal government from being able to communicate with social media companies in this way. What were your impressions of what you heard yesterday?
Well, first of all, that clip by Ketanji Brown Jackson, that was kind of terrifying, because the entire purpose of the First Amendment is to restrain the government. It's not to restrain the public from getting in the way of government action. It's the opposite. If it restrains the government, that's a good thing. That's sort of the idea behind the statute. In this instance, the reason this suit is being filed is because the plaintiffs in this case, in particular, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya and Martin Kulldorff and Dr. Aaron Hariati, they had their speech suppressed because they were contradicting a false government official opinion. And this is the entire purpose of the First Amendment, is to prevent the government from creating a hegemonic opinion that cannot be challenged. That is why we have a free press. And that was the essence of this case. And the government was allowed to argue the opposite.
Okay, first things first. The First Amendment of the Constitution is foundational to American freedom. And Ketanji Brown Jackson saying that the First Amendment is hamstringing the Supreme Court is laughable, because she took an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America. Now, I'm going to read you a few paragraphs from an article describing the free speech case that this is dealing with from the Missouri Independent. So this is just a few paragraphs of that article. I will have the link on the blog post for this podcast episode, so you can look for it there. But here is what is written on that article. The lawsuit was filed in 2022 by two states, Missouri and Louisiana, and five individuals who either were banned from a platform or whose posts were not prominently featured on social media sites such as Facebook, YouTube, and X, formerly known as Twitter. Fletcher argued that the plaintiffs have not shown any evidence that decisions by social media companies to remove or deprioritize content can be attributed to the government. Instead, the companies made their own decisions relying on their own content moderation policies. There was no coercion and intimidation, Fletcher said, and the best proof of that is that social media companies routinely said no to the government. They didn't hesitate to do that, and when they said no to the government never engaged in any sort of retaliation, Fletcher said. Instead, the federal government engaged in more speech. Ultimately, the president and the press secretary and the surgeon general took to the bully pulpit. We just don't think that's coercion. Benjamin Agugina, the solicitor general from the Louisiana Attorney General, argued that the government has no right to persuade platforms to violate America's constitutional rights, and pressuring platforms in back rooms shielded from public view is not using the bully pulpit at all. That is just being a bully. Emails obtained as part of this lawsuit, Aguilla contends, show that the government badgered platforms behind closed doors, abused them with profanity, and ominously says the White House is considering its options, all to get the platforms to censor more speech. Under this onslaught, he said, the platforms routinely cave. Government agencies have routinely encouraged social media companies to restrict harmful or illegal content for years, including posts involving terrorism and human trafficking. Agugina argued that speech involving criminal activity is not protected, but the Biden administration, he said, began to push social media companies in 2021 to restrict misinformation about the COVID-19 vaccine. Content was also targeted that involved election disinformation. In 2022, U.S. District Judge Terry Doughty, a court nominee of President Donald Trump, ruled that officials under both the President Joe Biden and Trump coerced social media companies to censor content over concerns it would fuel vaccine hesitancy during the COVID-19 pandemic or upend elections. And the title of that article is "Suit Alleging Suppression of Free Speech Met with Skepticism at U.S. Supreme Court." And again, that is from the Missouri Independent. The reason that I read that is to set the stage for what I'm about to say regarding this issue. As I said, the First Amendment is a key constitutional right that we have as Americans. And it boggles my mind how much the left wants to change the founding documents of our country and say that the Constitution is a living, breathing document when what it really is, it's a foundational document based on absolute truth. And here's the reality about suppression of people's views on social media. I have run into an increasing amount of censorship from Facebook of my podcasts and content. I don't know exactly what the community standards are that I'm violating, but I know that it seems to be an increasing reality for me lately that I will get a note after I post my blog post for each podcast on very many occasions that it violated community standards and so was taken down. I have had some times where I'm able to go back later in the day and put that blog post up. Other times, I am not allowed to do so again. But I find it very interesting because nothing that I post is graphic. The only thing that I do post are my own opinions about particular important topics. I also want to point out that during the COVID pandemic, there were some doctors that put together a website with potential alternatives for COVID treatment that they said were creating lasting, definite results and were potentially less harmful to people than the treatments that the hospitals and the mainstream was giving. But they were not allowed to have a dissenting opinion because their entire website about this topic was taken down between 24 and 36 hours after it was put up. I remember thinking at the time that this happened how ridiculous that was, and yet there are still so many indecent websites, porn and the like, that are allowed to stay up and nobody monitors or puts the kibosh on that, even though we clearly saw that they had the power to remove a website of someone that so ardently disagreed with mainstream thought. One of the issues that I have with social media is that Facebook, in particular, is supposed to be a place where content creators can put their content and express themselves freely. It is not supposed to be a news service. It is not supposed to condemn certain views and condone others. And yet that is what it has done. And the interesting thing about that is the way that they do it is somehow construed as okay, because they go along with the views of the liberal elite. So they can censor, for instance, a photograph of sheep with a Bible verse on it and say that this is a potentially violent image. So we wanted you to know that before you click on it and see it and check it out for yourself. While allowing for photos of half-naked women or other morally offensive content to be on their service. And it was just a few weeks ago that I featured a story about how it was found that some of the more radical members of the U.S. House of Representatives, who are Muslim, are on these Facebook groups that are private, that are known to have Muslim terrorists in them. Muslim terrorists should not have any Facebook groups. See, this is where discernment comes in. Because free speech is important. We need to let people from all walks of life, all views of life, have their say. That's what the basis of free speech is. But we need to have discernment to know when free speech crosses the line into something dangerous. And we're definitely seeing the results of a society that says, woe to those who call good evil and evil good. And what we are seeing is we are seeing that the violent and the criminal element are getting the benefit of the doubt. And those who are trying to live morally upstanding lives and embrace their place as American citizens, trying to better themselves and those around them, are being painted as something evil, and they're being censored and they're being removed from their places of influence. And that's part of what this lawsuit is about, because they're saying, basically, if you are leaving my content on your site, you're making it much harder for people to see my content. Now, this is something that has been going on in little ways for many years. When I first got on Facebook and started liking and using Facebook pages, I remember that anytime you were connected to a Facebook page, you would see every post they made on the page. Now, I'm sure it was in the guise of making your Facebook easier to read and not getting bogged down in useless information, but over time, they began to only show you select posts and only show you select page posts. And so it can be very difficult to get the information that you actually want to see on social media. So all this to say that the First Amendment is important. I want to say one final thing about this particular issue, and it's kind of timely that within the past week or so, I watched a Waltons episode. And on the Waltons episode, John Boy has a newspaper, and Hitler is beginning to move through Europe. The U.S. hasn't yet entered World War II in the timeline of the series where I'm at right now, but they will, because it does cover that time period in American history. I think it starts in like 34 or 35 and ends in the 40s. So we're talking about definitely that period of history where World War II happened. And he decides that he wants people to know how maniacal Hitler is. And one of the ways he's going to do that is by publishing portions of Mein Kampf in his newspaper. Now, people started complaining that he shouldn't print that kind of offensive content in his paper. Now, one thing that I noticed was kind of missing from that portrayal and that show was him explaining that he was going to put his own commentary in the paper and explain, hey, this is why I'm printing it. And there's a scene toward the end of the episode where the pastor is going to burn Mein Kampf and some other German books because he doesn't want their garbage to get out to people. He doesn't think it's appropriate for it to be there. He wants them to get rid of them and show them what he thinks of them by burning their books and trying to squash their ideas. And John Boy actually grabs the books from him and says, don't do this. Because this is exactly what Hitler is doing right now. He's suppressing other opinions. He's taking away the right to express your opinion. There is an official position of the Nazi regime, and you're not allowed to have any other position. That is how dictatorships start. That is how countries go from a country of liberty to a country of you do what I say when I say because I said it. So we need to be very careful about this idea of ever suppressing free speech. But when the Founding Fathers came up with the First Amendment, they knew that men weren't supposed to swear in front of children, and they knew that certain forms of speech were not appropriate because they had discernment. And today we don't. Today we end up eliminating speech that is simply offering a contrary opinion while excusing vile speech in the name of free speech. And we desperately need to get the right perspective on this. From the Supreme Court, our next story takes us to the wacky state of California. And it almost seems like we could do a weekly story on what is California up to now, because they certainly come up with some doozies.
A new California law is blocking police from posting pictures of many accused crime suspects. So one department's getting creative and replacing their faces with Lego heads. Check this out. Murrieta police recently posted this photo of two Lego heads arrested for shoplifting. Not looking so happy there. This one was busted for snatching someone's phone. And one of these guys was booked for drunk driving. But why can't they show their faces? That's the question. Murrieta PD explained that the new law, Assembly Bill 994, bars cops from sharing suspect photos for nonviolent crimes in most cases. Any mugshots they do post have to be deleted after 14 days. Because, Jesse Waters, in California, criminals are who get protected over victims and over public safety.
Well, as executive editor of Jesse Waters Crime Time, right. I don't like this new law because when we're trying to find mugshots of suspects to put on the show, I can't put up someone with a Lego face. We need to see what the person looks like. So I don't like that. But also, if I was ever in this precinct and they maybe arrested me for something I didn't do, because you know I'm always innocent, and it was a false arrest, and I was eventually found not guilty because I'll have a good lawyer like you or Judge Jeanine, then yes, this would be very, very good. And I would want that. So what probably happened is a very wealthy individual from this county got popped for something embarrassing, and then he greased the city council to put this law through so that never happens again. And I talk a lot about this in my book, Emily, called Get It Together. Wait, we interviewed someone who wants to empty prisons and believes prisons, even for violent felons, should be like dorms. So you could go in and out and go visit your girlfriend, go grocery shopping and go to work. And we'll talk more about Get It Together later, I'm sure.
We definitely will. And Martha, at the end of the day, so sure, that's a good way of drawing out a positive underside, which is that there's no social stigma or lasting legal stigma on people that are arrested for nonviolent crimes. But it's one more example of hamstringing law enforcement, because we all know that it's what's transparency is what's so important. Communication between police departments and the feds, different agencies. That's why we have databases like CODIS and so many databases that victims have fought for and attorneys have fought for so that criminals are put behind bars, not so that they get their reputations improved.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm just thinking about for larger crimes, we see perp walks all the time.
Yes.
Before people are convicted. So I'm not sure why for these minor crimes. And obviously, once your name is cleared, your name is cleared. And I think they have a policy of destroying these photos so that they don't, you know, hang around forever. But I also can't help but think when I see things like this that there's so much going on in California. You know, people are crossing the border. They have enormous drug problems. They have fentanyl. So the idea that someone is sitting around at the precinct, like pasting little Lego heads onto some of the photos disturbs me a little bit, just in terms of how their time is being used and the energy that's going into this.
That's where your tax dollars are going when you're a Californian.
Yeah.
And here's where your tax dollars are also going, because the bill doesn't stop there, you guys. Let's put up on the screen what the bill also requires, which is it requires law enforcement to affirm gender identity because heaven forbid someone they're arresting has their feelings hurt. Using the name and pronouns provided by an arrestee, this is part of the bill language, constitutes an important step toward affirming the true racial and gender identities. This may have the ultimate result of deterring the posting of mugshots altogether, even when doing so may serve a legitimate law enforcement interest, such as, oh, I don't know, maybe asking additional potential victims to come forward to assist with the prosecution. Kaylee, it makes me ashamed to be from California.
Yeah, this reminds me, you did a segment on your show, Jesse, about a guy, or I think it was a girl, I don't know, I don't want to misgender anyone, guy, girl, whatever, who was being arrested, right, and insisted that the cop, like, affirm the gender identity during the arrest. It was insane, but, like, this is where we're going with law enforcement. Affirm the gender identity, put a Lego head on you, why can't we blur the faces?
Okay, so I've said this many times, and I actually said it again on a Facebook post about Ketanji Brown Jackson's statements on the First Amendment, that we have no need for satire anymore, because the real news is just that bizarre. So think about this particular situation here. Mugshots are a regular part of the justice system. If you get into trouble, your mugshot is issued. Now, I understand that if you are found to be innocent, your mugshot should be destroyed because you've been found to be innocent and you worked through the justice system and you got your freedom back, as one should. We have a justice system that says innocent until proven guilty. But it seems like in California, which is really the incubator for the rest of the country, if you think about it, there are several other liberal states that will probably try this after California, and then the federal government will try to get some of this to filter into other states that don't want it. That just seems to be the way things go. But considering this law, there's so much focus on externals of doing the right thing by the criminal that the victim is not cared for. Think about this. So we cannot show the mugshot of a suspect. We have to cover their face. So we have these Lego mugshots coming out, which is one police department's attempt to deal with this with humor, but also prove a point that we need to be able to have mugshots in order to execute justice and ensure public safety. But there's also a component in this law that says you have to properly gender someone. Now, it wasn't that long ago, we had the Nashville school shooting, and it was perpetrated by a trans man, quote-unquote, who was a female biologically, and the media, instead of talking about the victims of this heinous crime and talking about the need for investigators to be able to put all the facts together and bring justice where needed, they spent the majority of their news coverage talking about the gender of the person who did this and apologizing when they did not get the person's preferred gender put forth in the news coverage. Why do we live in a place in the United States of America where the criminals get more attention, more care, more consideration than their victims? It is so ridiculous as to be laughable. And I hope that the people in the 49 other states of our country will hold their ground and realize that there's a line, and California has clearly crossed it. I can't help but feel bad for many of California's citizens as well, because California being as big as it is, I think that there is a small vocal minority of the population that is able to make a decision for the remainder of California because of the way it is set up. If it's anything like Michigan, the biggest counties, the biggest cities are near Detroit, and Detroit skews liberal. So whenever we have a statewide election like governor, or we're electing U.S. senators, the Democrats have a huge advantage. That's why we've spent the majority of my lifetime with two Democratic senators, even though we've flip-flopped back and forth between Republican and Democratic governors. So we've been, for the majority of this time, what I like to call a purple state. Because there's a few big counties that make a difference for the entire state. And I think that's probably even more pronounced in California because it is so huge. Hence, various proposals to break up California into multiple states. The latest one that was attempted would have split California into four states. Of course, the way that the law works, in order to do that, it would have to pass the state and then go to the federal legislature where two-thirds of the states would have to agree to add states to the union. And so it would be a long, laborious process, even if the people of California wanted it. But I definitely favor something like that because California is gargantuan. And so it can be very difficult for the citizens of California, I'm sure, to feel well represented. It can be easy to believe that California is like 100% liberal, but I know there are believers who lament the direction of their state. And one of the challenges that we face when we have a liberal government is to maybe have this thought, well, if I move to a conservative state, then things will be better. And that may very well be what God calls you to do. But then you're not available to make a difference within your own state. So this is a challenge that we in Michigan have to think through. Now, I personally love the state of Michigan. I don't love the winters, but I have well established that concern before. I don't need to go into detail about it here. But 9 months out of the year, I love Michigan, and I'm glad that I live here. So the last thing I want to do is leave just because it has become liberal. But I do know, California, if you're listening, that if you want to keep people in your state, you have to care about the people in your state. Well, we're just about to wrap up the broadcast today, but I just wanted to share with you one more story about the Biden administration majoring in the ridiculous.
Well, the Fox News and Night Common Sense Department just read the internal newsletter by the Biden administration's diversity, equity, and inclusion team. It was sent to agencies like the FBI, CIA, DHS, and DOJ, among others. It's about changing the terminology related to counterterrorism to get rid of problematic phrases like jihadist or Islamic extremist. The goal is to be more inclusive with our adversaries like Iran and China. We learned the Biden administration would also get rid of terms like blacklist, brown bag, and cakewalk because we're told they are racist. Of course, the same people who want to drop the word jihadist also want to drop the term illegal immigrant. Common Sense would remind the Biden DEI team that illegal alien or immigrant wasn't just concocted by the right to be derogatory. It is the exact term used in the federal law. It's not offensive. It's accurate. As for the word jihad, it means war against non-Muslims. And a jihadist is a holy warrior. Again, not offensive, accurate. You can soften the language all you want, but the people who attacked and killed 1,200 Israelis on October 7th are not freedom fighters. They are Hamas terrorists, heartless killers. And common sense would suggest kinder, gentler terms is unlikely to make kinder, gentler jihadists.
Isn't it interesting that the same people that want softer terms for actual terrorists, whether they be from Hamas or elsewhere in the world, and they don't want us to use jihad, they call us, the conservatives, deplorables. They call us terrorists for having a definitive moral standard, but they won't call a group of people who blew up the World Trade Center or who continue to cross the border in hopes of perpetuating terror upon us as terrorists. They side with Hamas, even though they claim to be for equality and they want people who are in alternative lifestyles to have equal rights, but they don't acknowledge to those people that Hamas, who they also support, kills people in alternative lifestyles, kills those who are gay and lesbian, because they don't see it as an acceptable lifestyle choice. So they are nothing if not inconsistent. There is a definitive double standard because they want to soften the language on real criminals. But yet, as we saw from a memo in the New York Fire Department, they wanted to hunt down people who were doing a protest at the firefighter graduation. Hunt them down. And then when they were challenged on that, when people pushed back on that, when they got media blowback on that, they said, well, we're not hunting them down. We're just trying to make sure they follow protocol. Well, make no mistake, there is an agenda, and that agenda has no place for people who believe that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. It has no place for people who believe that marriage is between one man and one woman, and it has no place for people who believe that life begins at conception and should be defended with everything in our beings. The same people who advocated for 2 years leading up to the presidential election that we needed to fight for abortion more than ever because they had this idea, and rightly so, that Trump was going to get the votes to overturn Roe versus Wade. The same people that told us that abortion is health care and that we need to push it as safe and happy and just a choice are the same people who turn around and tell you we need 11 million illegal aliens to come into this country because we don't have enough workers. Well, maybe if we advocated to our people to go home and raise a family and prioritize family, maybe we would be a much more orderly society. Maybe we would have people to do jobs. Maybe we would have people to have inventions that will change the world. Maybe we would have people who would come up with legitimate cures for cancer. But in many ways, we'll never know because we kill our future. I've never understood why a political party would be so bent on killing their future supporters. But that's what the Democrats, in fact, do when they push the abortion narrative. We need to stop changing the names for things. We need to call sin what it is. It's sin. And we need to shine a light on what's right and what's wrong. And strive for the right at every opportunity. That is the challenge and the obligation of every born-again believer. Well, that's all I have time for on today's show. I hope that you've enjoyed this edition of the Culture Watch podcast. If you have, will you take the time to contact me with the info that's about to roll at the end of the show? I would really like to hear from you. If there are any news stories that you think I should tackle in a future episode, or if you have any opinions that you'd like to share with us, please let me know. With that being said, I will simply say, have a great week, and keep serving the best of masters.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. Your host has been Andrew Gamson, founder of Speaking for Him. For more information on today's show and to leave us comments and voicemails, visit speakingforhim.blogspot.com. You can find Andrew's ministry at speakingforhim.com. That's speaking, the number 4, H-I-M. You can also interact with us at facebook.com/speakingforhim and on Twitter at Speaking for Him. And when you look for us on iTunes and Stitcher, let us know what you think of the podcast by leaving a rating and review.